I am too. The 29th of April, 1955, to the 28th of April, 1956. Over. Pink is the Colour by Dominic Wade. I was born in Southern Africa. My father was a man of the cloth. He gained a position in a village to help spread the word of God to the local people. We all understand the first 5 years of our lives are the formative ones. Remembering how those years guided us in our future lives is another question entirely. I must have enjoyed running around as a little boy in that part of Africa, starting to see, smell, and sometimes taste what was out there. My mother has told me that I showed quite an interest in the local area from around the time I learnt to walk. We were, of course, separated from the indigenous people, something a two-year-old has no real understanding of. My mother would be sent clothes for me by her Aunt Maud, who lived in Lamlash on the Isle of Arran. These clothes were suitable for the warmer climate of Africa, no woolly jumpers to speak of. My father often amused himself by informing me that my mother would dress me to look something like a colonial explorer out to hunt some large wild game in the bush of the land that surrounded us. Of course, there were real gentlemen out hunting these beasts not far from our home. My mother would always strictly advise me to stay away from them in case I too got shot. One object that drew my fascination for a number of months was an SAS Pink Panther Land Rover that had been driven down from North Africa during the Second World War. My mother was not that fond of me playing near it. Maybe the pink colour of this secret vehicle captured my attention. My father told me that I would attempt to climb up onto the driver's seat when they were both not looking. I understand it took me quite a few months to be able to get into the seat and pretend to be taking this vehicle on a top secret mission across the Sahara Desert. My father would speak of his work with the local people. I think he would have liked us to have been able to have more to do with them. The policy of the South African government would not allow this. He would tell us about the ways in which they lived their lives. At 2 years old, I could only understand some of this. My father showed me the clothes they wore and the items they used in their everyday lives. I think he really wanted me to understand how different their culture was. We would eat food similar to these local people, beans, meat, and various leaf vegetables. Then, on the occasional Sunday, my mother would do her best to prepare a roast. It was often roast chicken, beef, or pork, not being that easy to come by. The potatoes were very similar to how they would have been back in Scotland. The rest of the vegetables were local to the African environment. We would have bush okra and another green known as African spinach. My mother has said that I would eat up all the spinach with no hesitation. The bush okra I was not so fond of. We moved to Newton Stewart, Galloway in Scotland during that year that I was two. My father had been reposted back to Scotland from Nonokwe, Transkei in Southern Africa. He was to be the minister in Newton Stewart. Along with the working place of the church in Newton Stewart, my father was given a home in the centre of this small town for himself, my mother, my big sister and myself. We quickly settled into this new house. It was different from the one we had in Africa. It was a proper Scottish stone place with an upstairs, downstairs, and even a cellar. Our home in Africa was smaller. and also on a single level, as most homes were there. Newton Stewart was a very typical Scottish small town of the time. My mother would take me out for walks in the pram. She said to me that I seemed to enjoy being out in the Scottish air. The area around the Pencalm Burn River is particularly pretty. Back in the 1950s, it felt more remote than it does nowadays. My mother would stop at the stone bridges that cross the Pencalm Burn and hold me up to look up and down the river. She said I seemed to enjoy this, listening to the gushing water as it flowed fast over the rocks and along the banks of the river. Our house in Newton Stewart had four bedrooms, one for my parents, one for my big sister, and one for little boy Bill, and one for my granny when she stayed with us. We had a garden to the rear of the house. This is where I learned to walk. My father grew a sizable amount of roses in the beds. These were well fed by the local manure from the cows and horses that lived on the farms and on the country homes in the surrounding area. My mother has always said it took me some time to adjust to the Scottish food. It was, of course, very different to what we ate in Africa. Not quite as healthy, but no doubt set me up well for the life that lay ahead of me. I'm pretty sure we did not have any deep fried Mars bars. My mother would let me have the occasional Tunnock's tea cake when I had been good. Being good as a two-year-old was, I imagined, not displaying too much of the terrible twos that most children do. She may also liked it when I walked around the garden carefully looking at and smelling my father's roses. The most music and art that I was exposed to during our time in Newton Stewart until 1964 was Scottish-based. I will have heard the pipes playing during Christmas and other significant holidays during the year. The pictures hanging in my parents' home were also of interest to the two-year-old Bill. These, I understand, were local scenes of Scotland.
Under. I Will Not Go Gentle by Don McCracken. I'm 2 years old and I wonder, I wah 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 wonder, right now about the setting sun and the big red sky that fills my view from my silver cross pram. It's being shown to me by my mother. I also start to wonder about her. Her face is my own reflection, her voice an ever-loving echo of the bird's song and gurgling rivers that we pass on my afternoon nap. Her pointing finger is as much my own as the moon balanced briefly on the tip, as is the wind in the alder leaves, the fiery light in my eyes, carrot and mashed potatoes, the man with the foggy fog pipe we meet at the sweetie shop, who sticks his jolly face into mine to nuzzle my cheeks, the crows in the sky, cats and dogs, all the frogs on their lily pads, and all the ponds they splash into. Ribbit and plop are sounds I understand as one language. Understand, understood, underlying. Something strange is trying to take shape. I'm becoming aware of her finger, the sun, the moon, and myself as individual pearls on the necklace Granny wears. And I wonder at this unfamiliar distance. I raise my arm and point along with Mummy, and all I can see is the space between our fingers. It's different than it was before. I'm perched on the cusp of forgetting, and it frightens me so much I start to cry. My pram gets rocked and rolled to soothe my fears, but no, I will not go gentle. I've been here before, and I still remember how everything ends up lost, abandoned, rediscovered, and re-disappeared. This new-found sense of wonder is the sugar lump bait in the trap of separation, the bubbles bleeding out of the sunken beauty in the eye of the maelstrom, dragging me down. Even as I cling, I can feel myself falling through the depths of the waters that gave rise to my being, no longer one with the waves. It's cold out here, and I am not yet nearly dry. I gag and retch as Mummy tells her friend it's the terrible twos, and tickles me with meadowsweet, and tells me it's going to be fine. That's not the problem. Never will be. Of course it's all going to be fine. Everything is fine already. How could it not be fine? But soon I am bound to forget. Lonely as a long-distance swimmer, I will think I am a raindrop again and miss the ocean. I will sit and look out to sea and wonder at the beauty of it all and think that it is different from me. I remember this time from before, being slowly crowded out by something familiar yet alien, a fellow twin self stranger I have nothing and everything in common with. Last time began with visions and hallucinations that felt more real than anything my five waking senses ever had to bring to the table. I was an African woman then, as old as the shadows on the red rocky hills beyond our village. An elder unbecoming, becoming an infant again. I possessed all the knowledge of my tribe, rituals and dances and lore, but still thresholds always hold a certain terror. Because we forget the cycle. I remember the feeling of another eye whispering into my bed and softly, slowly, gently stealing the blanket, inching me out to the side and cradling me onto the floor. How scared I was to lose my mind, because in the face of oblivion, I couldn't summon all that I knew, that my mind was never mine to lose. That we suffer from incurable semantics, that the pendulum is always swinging between creation and decay, that each resists and fears the demon other. This time I will not forget. It's always the same sun rising, setting, though never the same way twice, and not even rising or setting. It's we who are spinning anticlockwise. I've crossed that boundless divide so many times over, I'm now what they call an old soul. At least I can remember I forget, and this time I won't lose my grip. Billy will always blindly intuit things he's unaware of, being aware of things he doesn't know he knows. He'll look down into the big black hole of a saxophone and realize all sound is born of silence, born of sound. He'll hear the wop-bop-a-loo-bop and understand it's his ears that are creating the music. Little Richard recorded that song today. Somewhere very far away from here, Billy knows it, and it makes him giggle. If he could find the words, he'd tell you, "It's funny because it's true. All the world's a stage, but it's also an auditorium." Billy will know this and play, finding meaning in the liminal spaces. and if he ever forgets and his mind clouds over, I'll arrange for little Richard himself to scream it right into his face. He'll always be aware that wonder is born of both belonging and separation, and that both are of the other. Looking at the stars by the light of a guttering candle, he'll fall through the mirror and fathom the vastness of space. He'll know that questions and answers are closed, hermetic, syntactic, didactic, a wheel that we jump on to distract ourselves from being this beautiful cosmos. That life is a rhyme with no reason. I know this because I am Billy. Because I know that there is no Billy. Because Billies never were and always will be. Because all the Billies are numberless. I vow to save them all.
A Troubled Dream, Full to the Brim, by Tarris Young. I'm in a warm kitchen on a bright autumn day, sitting at a creaking wooden table. Across the room, on the hob of an ancient-looking Rayburn, I see a pot of bubbling stew. Leaning over the pot, a silhouetted figure stirs the stew, singing a gentle melody as she does so. I assume the figure is my mother, despite the figure being shrouded in darkness. As she brings the pot to the table, I realise with horror that it's full to the brim with fresh corpses of blackbirds, unplucked, their lifeless eyes staring back at me as their heads bob in the still simmering pot. The stew smells overpowering. The stench of overcooked garden birds mixes with a blend of putrid herbs and spices. Yet, I find myself drawn towards the brew, unable to look away as the figure, still hazy in my peripheral vision, gingerly removes the individual blackbirds from the pot and places them on a large silver serving platter. I feel a sense of panic and shame wash over me as I realise it's not my mother at all, but some unknown figure with soulless, bird-like eyes. I wake just as a large wooden spoon, dripping with the black broth, is shoved towards me.